I just want to start also thanking the Lee family. It's already 2 years running. Last year was before your daughter was even in the school, but thank you very much for hosting us for the second year. I just want to, I'll start with just a quick Torah thought that I actually thought about this past Shabbos. We had a Shabbaton in the school, and this is one of the things that I spoke about on Shabbos, that we find that Yaakov Avinu seems to undergo a transformation between last week's parsha and this week's parsha. In this coming week's parsha, we find that when Yaakov wakes up in the morning after his wedding and he finds out that it's Leah that he's married instead of Rachel, who he thought he was working towards marrying, so he goes downstairs and he yells at Lavan, Lama Remisani, why did you trick me, to his brother-in-law, his father-in-law. And Lavan tells him, whatever, you know, that this is what we do over here. But it's just interesting because last week's parsha, when Yitzchak is going to give the brachos to Esav, so Yaakov doesn't get upset about it at all. We find that Rivka, his mother, is the one who comes forward, and Rivka is the one who tells Yaakov to dress up like Esav and to prepare the food like Esav, and she's the one who pushes the whole plan forward, but Yaakov didn't seem to be proactive about it. And it's just interesting why that would be the case. Like when it comes to the brachos, which we're talking about the nitzchias of Klal Yisrael, we're talking about the, you know, the brachos that are going to determine that we are all sitting here today as a result of those brachos. And when it came to that, Yaakov didn't seem to react strongly at all. And yet, in this coming week's parsha, when it's, okay, so wives are also very important, obviously, but when it comes to the switching of the wives, we see Yaakov reacts much, much more strongly. So I wanted to suggest that perhaps that whole event with Esav and the brachos and Yitzchak was when Yaakov learned to be proactive in this way. And it was Yaakov had two parents. He had a father, Yitzchak, and he had a mother, Rivka. Yitzchak was a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Yitzchak was a tzaddik, and he was the son of Avraham Avinu, who was also a tzaddik. And the midah, the characteristic of a tzaddik, who's the son of a tzaddik, is to take what he got from his father and make it his own. In other words, it's not enough just to have inherited that spirituality, just to have inherited that all from Avraham. I'm saying with respect to Yitzchak. Yitzchak had to make it his own. He had to go through everything that Avraham had taught him, but make sure that he was acquiring it for himself, not just resting on his laurels, not just accepting the fact that he came and was brought up in such an illustrious family. He had to make it his own. Whereas Rivka was a tzaddik ben Rasha, or a tzaddik es bas Rasha, right? Rivka's father, Besuel, was a wicked man. So Rivka's midah was totally different. The midah of a tzaddik ben Rasha is the midah of somebody who can discern between truth and false, between emes and sheker, who can tell between tov and ra, to make that distinction between good and bad, and be decisive about that choice, right? It's a very different characteristic. A tzaddik ben tzaddik has to take the good and work it through on his own so that it becomes his own. Whereas a tzaddik ben Rasha is a totally different characteristic of being able to choose and tell the difference between good and bad. So I wanted to say that Yaakov, up until this story with the brachos, with Esav, you know, the Torah says he was an ish tam yoshev olim. He was a tzaddik ben tzaddik. He had the midah, his whole avoda, his whole work on himself was to take his Yerusha, that which he inherited, the spiritual inheritance from Avraham and Yitzchak, and work on it to make it his own. Rivka, who was a tzaddik ben Rasha, realized that for Yaakov to be the father of Klal Yisrael, he needed something more. He needed to have also that ability to discern good and bad and be decisive about it, make those choices. So she inculcated within him this second midah, the midah of a tzaddik ben Rasha, the midah of a person who's able to see good and bad and be decisive and act upon it and be more proactive, to be more of a force in that way. And I think you'll see the difference between Yaakov of this past week's parsha with the brachos and Yaakov literally from now on until the end of Sefer Bereishis. Yaakov from now on is a much stronger, more proactive Yaakov. And I think the thought is that he got this from Rivka. He inherited this from Rivka. Rivka taught him how to behave in this fashion when he got the brachos. I said a whole shiur on this on Shabbos with all the psukim, and I'm not going to go through that now. But the theme of the Shabbaton, as we'll see in a minute, that every Shabbaton always has a theme. The theme of the Shabbaton was "Ein ani li mili." If I'm not going to be for myself, so no one's going to be for me. That when a girl's coming to seminary for a year, So she has the tremendous opportunities in front of her. She's going to have a staff that's ready there for her to help her grow. She's going to have classes that are going to challenge her and inspire her. She's living in Israel. She's living in Yerushalayim for the year. But still in all, if she is not the one who's going to step forward and put that effort in, if she's not going to want be the one who says, I'm going to take advantage of my year, it's all going to pass her by. And I said that I really think that these two midos are the midos that we try to embody in Tomer Devora. The one midah of encouraging the students not just to rely on everything that they learned growing up, coming from homes and coming from schools where they learned Torah and they were infused with a sense of love of Torah and love of Klal Yisrael, but during this year to challenge those assumptions and make them their own, the midah of a tzaddik and tzaddik, to really think it through and be their own person, think about it and make it that this is their own way of looking at things, and at the same time also to look at their lives with that perspective of Rivka, to look at their lives and say, you know, maybe there's certain things in my life that I want to continue, maybe there's certain things I don't want to continue, but this is the time of my life to make those decisions. Now is the time to be thinking things through, to be going through what am I doing with myself, what am I doing with my future, and to be being decisive about it, making those choices and moving forward. So I really think that this is, if I had to sum it up, this is really what the focus at Tomer Devora is, to take each student as an individual, each girl who's coming into the school, and to encourage her to do both of these things, to look at her life, to reflect, and to see to it that all those things that she was brought up with, she's not just doing because she was brought up with it, but rather she's doing it because this is who she wants to be. And at the same time, to be examining herself, to be looking carefully and saying, you know, what are the choices that I'm going to be making going into the future? If I had to say what the type of girl is that comes to Tomer Devora, or what type of girl is Tomer Devora for, I think it comes down to two things. There's two qualities, let's say, that we look for in the students, two qualities that the school is catering to. On the one hand, it's a student who's coming for the year because she wants to take advantage of the academic, the curriculum that we have, somebody who's looking to expand her horizons in learning, somebody who's looking to increase both her honing of her skills as well as the breadth of her learning. The classes, which we'll talk about soon, span, you know, a wide array of classes, both in terms of classes that focus on text and classes that focus more on hashkafa. So it has to be somebody who's coming to the school because she wants to be learning. She wants to be taking advantage of classes. We were just speaking about this before over dinner, that it's not a camp. You know, it has to be that the students that are coming realize that they're coming to a school and they're going to be challenged in an academic way. And at the same time, it's somebody who's coming who wants to grow, somebody who's looking to be inspired, somebody who's looking to take advantage of her year and take leaps forward in terms of her spiritual development. I've said for the past 2 years when I've been speaking with people that a person who wants to know why they should be inspired, so Tomer Devora is not necessarily the place for her. In other words, somebody who's skeptical and doesn't know if she really is looking to grow or not, and convince me why it is that I should be interested in growth, so that I'm not sure if this is the place that caters towards that type of an attitude. Somebody who says, you know what, this is something I want to do, I'm not sure how to go about doing it, or I'm not sure to what extent, I'm not sure, you know, and that we're not looking to have the school be there to convince the girls that they do want to be religious and grow in spirituality. Somebody who wants that and wants to know how to go about doing it, or wants to be inspired to do it, so that really is what we're geared towards. Just to give you just a few examples in terms of the types of girls that we have over last year, this year there was a girl from Texas, and she wanted to make her own a vad, it's called, like a group of girls to work together on a midah. So she asked us if she could do it. We said certainly, you know, go right ahead during lunchtime. They were going to set this up, and or in the evenings. And she spoke to us about spoke specifically with Rabbi Fix, what they should work on, what they should focus on in terms of working on character development. And 25 girls showed up the first week that she did it. It was like 2 or 3 weeks into the school year. You see from there, just like there's a tremendous level of motivation, of interest, enthusiasm among the girls. It's also because it's a smaller school, and that's the way we're trying to keep it. It's a very close-knit group of girls. Last year, there was a girl from New York who was in the school, and she said to us you know, there's not a single girl in the school who, like, I wouldn't go out to Geula with on Friday. In other words, like, the even though she's not best friends with everybody in the school, but she felt comfortable enough with every single girl in the school that if she heard a couple of girls were going into Geula or going out together, she would say, oh, do you mind if I come along? You know, it's like a very close-knit group, and it's something that we focus on in the school. The programming and the way that we set up the Tiulim, the Shabbatonim, etc., there's a focus on keeping it that way, on engendering the sense of camaraderie and friendship and closeness among the girls. Just one other point is that we're looking for girls who are looking to be real. When I say real, I mean not somebody who wants to come to Israel just to focus on the externals, who wants to come to Israel looking one way and come back looking a totally different way, and come into Israel, you know, listening to one type of music and leave listening to a different type of music. You know, that's all fine, I guess, but we're looking for somebody who really is looking to make real steps in their growth in Avodas Hashem, real steps in terms of their focus in life, real prioritizing of what it is that they want to do with themselves. And if the externals change, they change. If they don't, they don't. That's not really what we're interested in or focusing on. We're really looking for a student who's coming to really focus on what it is that she needs to do as she steps basically, you know, from childhood into adulthood and is entering the period of life that she's making life-changing decisions. So we're looking for somebody who's looking to be very real about who she is and what her expectations are, where she's coming from and where she's going to. In terms of the curriculum, there's a wide range of classes.
How many students do you take?
So this year, right now we have 31 students, Shana Aleph. There's about 12 second-year students. And we're looking to keep it, let's say, between Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, between 40 and 60 girls, you know, combined. That's probably what we're looking for. I know the Shana Bet girls have their own dorm. The second year students are in their own dormitory, but they come to classes and eat and everything in the main school building. Some classes that they're actually in together with the Shana Aleph girls. All the events and Shabbatonim and everything is all together. So it's like, you know, more or less one large program. The curriculum is it's a very well-rounded curriculum in terms of what the classes that are offered. It's all in the literature, so I'm not going to take out the time right now just to read through a litany of what the classes are, but it spans from, the most intensive text-oriented class is the Chumash class. The Chumash class meets three times a week, and it's a very intense experience in terms of having the girls learn not just all the events and Shabbatonim and everything is all together. So it's like, you know, more or less one large program. The curriculum is it's a very well-rounded curriculum in terms of what the classes that are offered. It's all in the literature, so I'm not going to take out the time right now just to read through a litany of what the classes are, but it spans from, the most intensive text-oriented class is the Chumash class. The Chumash class meets three times a week, and it's a very intense experience in terms of having the girls learn not just what's happening, but how to learn it on their own. The very big emphasis on honing their skills of learning Chumash and Rashi and Ramban and the Mefarshim. I would say that's like on the one end of the spectrum. And then, the other end of the spectrum, we have classes that are more or less only Hashkafa without any text at all, but just, you know, class discussions, obviously, that are structured by the teacher. And then there's everything in between. Just for example, I teach halacha classes in the school, so my classes, most of them don't involve a text, but it's still a very rigorous class where they learn a tremendous amount of information. And then the other classes that focus on text, there's a wide range of classes that we spend a tremendous amount of time cultivating, if you will, the curriculum. And it ends up being a very well-rounded curriculum that at the same time is challenging the girls and pushing them to expand their horizons. And I think they also find that the classes are enjoyable. We find staff members that are engaging, that are personable. There are two tracks in the school, academically speaking. In other words, that it's not a seminary that focuses on a particular academic level. We have a wide range of girls. We have, you know, top of the line, straight A students, National Honor Society students on the one end of the spectrum, and there are students that are not as academically inclined, let's say, B-minus type students, but students who are really focused, who want to work, who want to learn, who want to grow. They're not just coming to the year to coast. They want to put in that effort, but they're just not as academically inclined, and that's totally fine for us. We have that type of a range, and the classes are broken up academically into two tracks, and the teachers cater to each track in order to focus and give over the type academic level. We have a wide range of roles. We have, you know, top of the line straight A students, National Honor Society students on the one end of the spectrum, and there are students that are not as academically inclined, let's say B minus type students, but students who are really focused, who want to work, who want to learn, who want to grow. They're not just coming to the year to coast. They want to put in that effort, but they're just not as academically inclined, and that's totally fine for us. We have that type of a range, and the classes are broken up academically into two tracks, and the teachers cater to each track in order to focus and give over the types of skills that each track wants, whereas the higher track will be focusing more on delving deeper into the Mefarshim on Chumash and delving deeper into what they're learning. The lower track will be focusing more on honing their reading skills, on how to read properly Chumash and Rashi and the Mefarshim.
How do you determine who goes to which track?
Based on their academic level, based on their transcripts, based on their interview. The truth of the matter is that within the first week or two of school, there's a certain amount of shifting that goes on. Girls that were up that move down, and girls that are down that want to move up, and that's fine. You know, we're very flexible. Any girl that wants to switch down, so we ask them to just give it a chance first and see if they can make it. A girl who wants to switch up, we give them a chance right away, and if they want to switch back down, it's fine. You know, it's a very non-judgmental type of environment. It's very warm, and we try to give the girls that, to empower them in that way, that if they want to give it a shot, so we'll give it to them, and they know what's best for them as well. So if it's working, then great, then let them stay there, and if they're struggling and still making it work, then great, but if they want to switch back down, then that's totally fine. They're not rigid. At the same time, there's a lot of Beis Medrash time in the school. The Chumash period, like I said, is 3 days a week of Chumash, and each Chumash class has an accompanying Beis Medrash period. So it comes out that they're spending a total of six classes, about 6 hours a week, on the Chumash material that they're learning between the three classes and the three Beit Midrash sessions. And during that Beis Medrash time also, so the girls who are more capable in terms of their skills and their abilities, so they'll learn on their own with just people available to answer questions in the Beis Medrash, and the girls who really need to hone their skills, so we'll pair them up one-on-one with a tutor that comes into the school literally to sit with them and work on their text, on their reading, on their translating. In other words, each girl on her own level gets the Beis Medrash experience that she needs in order to maximize her time. To maximize her time there. In addition to the Chumash Beis Medrash in the afternoon for three times a week also, there's another Beis Medrash session, and that's open Beis Medrash. Now, the girls more or less it's structured, but they can learn whatever they want. They could pick whatever topic they want to learn and learn together with the tutor, learn together in small groups. Again, it's structured. It's not just a free-for-all where everyone sits and does their own thing, but they have that freedom, they have that choice to choose to learn whatever they want. This is time that some girls choose to use for remediation if they need to make up work in other classes, or they need help in other classes. They'll use that Beit Medrash time also together with a tutor to catch up and boost their skills in terms of the other classes. As far as testing goes in the school, so let's work backwards. So we're on the Turo Joint Israel program as well as the TI Israel program for Chicago. Stern, we are hoping to be on the Joint Israel program for the coming year. There's a mandatory 2-year waiting list. We don't see why we would not be on it. Others, they've come to visit the school and have told us that that everything looks fine. But in the meantime, at least they accept the Tomer Devorah transcript, which means that if a student attends Tomer Devorah, in fact, the last girl from Los Angeles was here last year. She's in Stern now on a transcript from Tomer Devorah. So Stern will accept Tomer Devorah credits, and that means that there has to be obviously a certain caliber of that each class has to have a certain caliber and a certain amount of academic hours and times and testing. So there is a certain amount of testing in the school. Pretty much every class, or just about every class, has some form of testing. If it's periodical quizzes, or if it's a midterm and a final, or if it's a paper, there is that form of testing that goes on. Our hashkafa, our perspective behind it is as follows. We're on the one hand, we have to maintain the integrity of the school and the curriculum, and we have to make sure that the classes are being taken seriously and that the colleges are going to recognize our transcripts, so we have to have that level of testing. On the other hand, we're not here to be overwhelming the girls with work for their year. We definitely want to keep it that they have their space and that they have room to grow and to be thinking and working on other things, so it's a delicate balance that we strike of having the proper amount of testing to keep the courses rigorous and at the same time not being overbearing and making the girls feel that they have no space and no time to breathe and no time on their own. So there are many classes that just have a midterm and a final or a paper, and that way there's like a week or two of specified time that the girls know that they're really going to be locked down more or less in studying, and the rest of the time, you know, periodical quizzing or the like, but it's not something that we're looking to be overbearing. We're not looking, it's not Harvard in that respect. We're not looking at their year in Israel for their experience to be overwhelmed by the academic work. So it's a balance that we strike in the school. Just in terms of the college transcript, I'll just mention that a lot of people ask us in general, what's our attitude towards college? So the answer is most of the girls come out of Tomer Dvorah are in college, and we have girls that right now, alumni from last year, that run the range from being in Stern and Touro all the way to the other end of the spectrum. We have a student who's now in Goucher College. I don't know if you're familiar with it, in Baltimore. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I know it very well.
Oh, okay. So we have a student who's currently in Goucher, and I keep up with her, and she discusses with me very openly the challenges that she has there in terms of the dorm life and everything.
It's in Baltimore.
It's a liberal arts college. Yeah. And Baruch Hashem, she's doing very well there. I really speak to her, every few weeks. We're either in touch via email or on the phone, and she'll tell me that, that she was, at night one time she went, she's on an all girls dorm, but when boys come to visit, there's only one bathroom on the floor, and she went in, there were boys there, and it was like, she was taken aback by it, and, there's a lot of challenges that she has. And, Baruch Hashem, she feels that we really prepared her very well for the challenges that she's facing there in terms of tznius, in terms of, interactions. And, she's really, thank God, she's doing very, very well over there. And it's, she's a student that we are extraordinarily proud of. So we have, a range of colleges that the girls go to following Tomer Dvorah. Both Rabbi Fix and myself, both of our wives, have masters. My wife has a master's in speech therapy from Montclair State University in New Jersey. Rafix's wife has a master's in therapy. It's not something at all that we are discouraging of the girls, but like I said, in terms of even the student who's in Goucher, there's a way to do it. There's an approach, and there's a fortification process that that should be taking place first, so that when a person goes away to college, that they're not going to be overwhelmed by what they're going to encounter there. Finally, in terms of the curriculum, we're very flexible in terms of classes that girls are interested in. I have masters. My wife has a master's in speech therapy from Montclair State University in New Jersey. Rafix's wife has a master's in therapy. It's not something at all that we are discouraging of the girls, but like I said, in terms of even the student who's in Goucher, there's a way to do it. There's an approach, and there's a fortification process that that should be taking place first, so that when a person goes away to college, that they're not going to be overwhelmed by what they're going to encounter there. Finally, in terms of the curriculum, we're very flexible in terms of classes that girls are interested in. Just for two examples, last year there were several girls, six or seven students, that that felt that there were certain fundamental tenets of belief, certain fundamental ideas in Hashkafa and philosophy having to do with belief in God and belief in the Torah, that they really didn't feel that they were on the same level as the other girls in the school. And that there were certain things that they felt many of the classes were taking for granted that they still felt that they really could have used some more strengthening on. So I started a new class with them on Tuesday nights. We had a class. They ended up calling it special ed. That was what they named it. But it was a very informal class. We just sat around together, and every week we just brought up topics of emunah, topics of hashkafa, discussions, and they would ask me questions, and I would discuss it with them. And it was, for me, one of the most enjoyable classes to teach, and the girls got a tremendous amount out of it. Now this year, already a couple weeks into the year, there were several girls that were troubled by certain questions about science and Torah and evolution and creation, these types of things, It happens to be that that's an area that I just have a very big personal interest in. So we did the same thing. So we opened up a new class during lunchtime once a week. Also an informal class, not a class that there's testing and that, but we have a class that we meet together. And we discuss all these things very openly about the Big Bang and all, you know, these questions of science and Torah and whether things work and don't work. And you know, the idea being that our focus is that the girls should be getting the most they can out of their year. And if there's, you know, a small group of girls that really want to be learning about something else, so it's not enough to offer a class to the whole school because not everybody has that interest. But we're going to do our best to make sure that every student who has an interest that they feel needs to be addressed, that we're going to be there to address it for them. Just happens to be, I'm thinking of the two examples of things that I teach, but there's other teachers also that have chavrusas with the girls, set up a private learning time with the students in small groups or one-on-one. And others, any student who really feels that there's something that she is looking for more than what the curriculum offers, so we're very happy to provide it to her. And, you know, again, thankfully it works out very nicely.
What would you say, like, the balance is from, like, hashkafa versus text? Like, how do you...
So it's interesting because those are not necessarily opposites in the school. In other words, there could be hashkafa classes that are very text-oriented. For example, like we have a Chamesh Megillot class taught by one of the Mechanchot, Mrs. Aviva Feiner, and that class has a lot of hashkafa in it, but it's also a text class. And then you have classes that are, let's say, like my Hilchos Shabbos class, where there's no text, but it's not hashkafa at all. In other words, in Torah Devorah, it's not necessarily text versus hashkafa. You can have hashkafa classes that are very textual, and you can have non-textual classes that are not hashkafic whatsoever. So that's what I'm trying to say. There's a range. I mean, if you look in the back, it has basically a list. If you look in the FAQ, on the last page, is a list of all the courses. So you could take a look there and see basically what the names of all the classes are. I think it's pretty well-rounded. You know, there's Chumash, which is, you know, very heavily textual. But then also, every now and then, I'll mention something in one of the Hashkafa classes, and the girls will say, oh, Mrs. Lieberman told us that in Chumash. You know, so things come up, you know, across right. The board. But you know, the Chumash class is textual. The Nach class is textual, taught by Rabbi Zev Rodman. The Chamesh Megillot class is textual. There's a range. There's a range of classes.
What if, like, the way EULA is set up and the tracks that they have, that some of the tracks just have not emphasized text at all? Practically everything's been. I mean, I guess you say it's not in conflict, but. But really, they just haven't trained them to,
right. I mean,
to address that. And like, but they happen to be an extremely motivated, exciting, great class full of kids that want to learn. But they just don't have that basis because they weren't given it.
Right.
So like, what happens there?
Okay, so that's an excellent question. We have this year and last year we have students coming straight from public school with no formal Torah education at all. Girls who can't read Rashi print, you know, who are coming to Tome Devora, and we set them up with private tutors in the Beis Medrash to work with them. In other words, these are intelligent girls who understand concepts very well, and they can follow what's going on in class, even if they can't follow the text. So in class, they focus on getting the concepts down and writing, taking notes, and then in the Beis Medrash session, they focus their entire time in synthesizing what they understand conceptually with being able to read it inside. And
so would you say, I mean, that's the other way to put it, like you say you're more of an inside school versus an outside school, or is it more
it's a mix.
A little bit of it?
It's a mix. It's really a mix. We really spend a lot of time, both in terms of the curriculum and in terms of the teachers, of making it be a mix. In other words, we didn't want it to be that the curriculum would be something that either a girl is coming only for the curriculum, because you know, a girl who's coming to Israel only to increase her text skills, so then I'm not sure if Tome Devorah would be the right place for her, if that's what she's coming specifically to focus on. At the same time, we don't want girls who are coming who are not interested in honing their skills and just want to talk hashkafa all day. That also is not. It's just interesting, there's a girl from a different seminary. This is the time of year that girls seemed to switch. Right, so we had three girls from one particular seminary that came to see Tome Devorah the week before I left. Two of the girls, they sat in on the Chumash class, and they said, no, this is not for me. You know, they want a place where they could basically talk and shmooze about Hashkafik and Yanim. So we do have classes somewhat like that. Again, there's definitely every class has a certain structure to it, but a girl who just wants to coast through academically, so it's not really the place for her. We're definitely looking for a girl who's going to apply herself in Chumash class and is going to take advantage of the base manager. I mean, the base manager sessions, you know, you'll be there, Mirtz Hashem, in a week. So, you know, on a Sunday morning, you walk into the base medrash and you'll see, you know, 25, 30 girls sitting, focused, learning. It's, you know, it's very beautiful to see. So there's a balance. That's there's a balance that we want it that a girl who is coming to take advantage of what we have to offer, but who needs that high level of challenge for the text classes will find it there. And at the same time, a girl who could be overwhelmed if the whole curriculum was textual, right, but can handle the amount that we have, will also find her place, right? That's that type of a balance that we strike. In terms of the staff, it's very interesting. I kind of realized somehow this past week that we have more staff members than we have students. Than we have more staff members than Shana'al. I'm saying including, you know, secretaries and tutors in the Beis Medrash and teachers and madrichot and mechanchot and administrators. That if you put it all together, it comes out that the staff to student ratio is even higher than 1-to-1. It doesn't mean that all those people are there all day. Obviously, I'm talking about people even who come in and out. But the idea being that the school is set up in such a way that there's no such thing as falling through the cracks in Tome Devorah. There's just no such thing. The staff knows, and we, you know, in-service them before the year begins. We talk about it with them over the course of the year. That you know, one of the defining marks of Tome Devorah is the warmth and the attention and the staff to student interaction. That on the one hand, it's not overbearing, as we're not looking to be like big brother, that each girl feels that there's somebody looking over her shoulder, but on the other hand, it's not possible for a girl to fall through the cracks the way the system is set up. You know, every girl interacts every day with her teachers, with the madrichot, with the mechanchot, with her tutors in the Beis Medrash, with Rabbi Fix and myself, whose offices are right off of the student lounge, and we're available at least to say hi, if not always to have a lengthy talk, because we're very busy, but they can schedule a talk and they'll catch us whenever they need to. There's just, you know, a tremendous amount of staff and student interaction that takes place. Even in terms of like the layout of the building is done in such a way to maximize this, that, you know, there's a student lounge, which is where the coffee is and the couches, and that's, you know, where the girls hang out, and all the offices and the classrooms all spill out into that one area. So like in between classes, there's all of this mingling, and you know that's taking place. The students coming out of class and the teachers coming out of class and into the next class. There's just the whole, there's this energy, there's this warmth that exists in the interaction between the staff and the students. That's something very special. People come into the school and they say that they just feel it. They just feel that there's a certain warmth, a certain energy that exists. The staff, in addition to being fantastic mechanchim and mechanchot, people who are experienced in teaching, there's a tremendous focus on the students. We tried very hard. We're not looking to hire staff members who, you know, are kind of hit and run, who come and teach an hour and then leave and then teach an hour in another school. We really try to have it that at least most of our staff members, close to all of them, you know, their focus is really Tome Devorah, that they're focusing their kochos, that they're, anytime we have an opportunity to give more hours to one of our staff members versus bringing in another person, we'll always opt to give more to one of our staff members, because that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a staff who's investing in the school, who's investing in the girls, who's really a part of it. And the administrative decisions about who to call in for a substitute teacher, you know, and to give the substitute position, you know, when I'm away now, to somebody who's a member of the staff already, as opposed to bringing somebody else in, it makes a difference. The girls feel it. They see the same faces all the time. They see that their staff is there for them. They see that there's that warmth and that interaction that's taking place. You know, it's definitely something you'll speak to any of the alumni. We're just speaking about it over dinner also. I don't know of any of the alumni now from last year that are not still on some level in touch with the members of the staff. Rabbi Fix, who he and I run the school together, we're, you know, exactly equal. So he's now in New York and he was in England. And everywhere he goes, the alumni are coming to the Israel Nights, you know, to speak on behalf of the school and to see him. There's just, you know, a very close bond that's created between the girls and the staff. And it's something we work very hard to maintain. I'll just give you one more example and then we'll move on. Are you familiar with the Kedma choir competition that takes place, the YU Kedma competition? Every year, YU and this organization called Kedma, who raises money for Hachmasas Kala, they have, for the boys, they have a battle of the bands, and for girls, they have a choir competition. And it's this very big competitive event that takes place of 16, 17 schools that enter. So last year was our first year in existence, and we entered the competition, and you know, Baruch Hashem, we won third place, which is it was tremendously exciting.
Big.
You could see it if you want; it's available online. I've never seen it, but if you want the link, we can email you the link to where the video exists. It was a tremendous boost. No, it was a tremendous boost for the school, for the morale. But what was, I think, the most exciting aspect of it is, like, almost the entire staff came, of the women, obviously. Like, just they all showed up on a Motzei Shabbos in the middle of the winter, and the girls were so touched by it. They were just, like, it was so... But, you know, we didn't even encourage them. We didn't, you know, we told them about when it was going to be. But, you know, there's that real strong bond that exists between the students and the staff. It's something very special. If you remind me at the end, I'll give you an email address that you could send, and they'll send you the link, and you could see the performance. But, you know, Baruch Hashem, it was a very big boost for the morale and for the girls. It's a tough act to follow, though, for this year. But, you know, we'll see. Meretz Hashem.
Is anyone cold?
No.
Okay, moving on, just in terms of the programming in the school, in addition to the classes and to the curriculum, the academic curriculum, our focus really is that the whole year should be an educational experience. You know, there's not just the classes, and then when you're out of class, so, you know, go do your own thing. All the Tiulim, all the Shabbatonim, everything that we have is all geared towards making it like this holistic experience. In other words, the Tiulim that we have is, in addition to just giving them downtime and giving them time to bond and giving them time away, but you know, there's an educational facet to the Tiulim also. The Tiulim, by and large, focus on some aspect of Ahavat Yisrael, of some aspect of appreciating and understanding Eretz Yisrael. You know, tour guides go along with them. A lot of times the Tiulim serve as tremendous boosts in terms of this Achdus. We don't usually send upper staff at all on the Tiulim. It's just the girls together with the Madrichot. Yeah, there's a medic that goes along from the tour company. And people are surprised. They make the face that people are surprised at that approach. But it helps tremendously. It helps the girls in terms of their bonding. It also shows the girls and you know, they feel it, that, you know, we're treating them like adults, that they're responsible, that we trust them. And Baruch Hashem, it's worked fine already for a year and a half. More or less every Tiul, the Madrichot go along. You know, you are single girls who are few years older. Occasionally one of the Mechanchot will go along also. You know, even to a lot last year, it was a two-night, three-day Tiul, and it was just the girls with the Madrichot, and it went fantastically well. And that itself is an empowering educational experience for the girls. You know, like the whole year, every aspect of the year, every facet are things that we are... I don't know if the girls realize it, but they come away from the year, you know, with this sense of having matured, of having grown, of having been empowered. Likewise, I mentioned earlier the Shabbatonim that we have throughout the year. Every month is a mandatory Shabbaton. You know, I brought these calendars. You can maybe just like pass these around while we're talking. This is just from the beginning of the year, September, October, and November. So every month is like either an in-school or an out-of-school mandatory Shabbaton. Each Shabbaton has a theme, and we focus on that theme throughout the Shabbos. The girls put on a skit having to do with the theme, and then Rabbi Fick speaks, and I speak, and we bring in a guest speaker, and it's a very powerful experience. Usually the Shabbatonim are like, you know, there's a focus over the course of the whole Shabbaton on a specific theme. And again, it's also a time of Achdus, when the girls get together and they sing, and it's a bonding time. In addition, we have Shabbatonim, optional Shabbatonim, almost every other Shabbos. In other words, so like once a month is a mandatory Shabbaton, but then like 2 weeks after that and 2 weeks before it will be one of these optional Shabbatonim. So first of all, this gives the girls a chance, girls who don't have family or friends in Eretz Yisrael, so they don't have to make Shabbos plans. And also, it's another form of bonding with the staff. These optional Shabbatonim are always in staff locations. Let's say where I live in the Sanhedrin Mochevet Ramat Eshkol area, so we just had a few weeks ago a Shabbaton in our neighborhood, and we set up all the girls to eat meals and sleep by staff members as well, and we had an oneg by another staff member's house, and the staff members come to the oneg. You know, it's a very bonding experience. We're going to have another one in Ramat Beit Shemesh, one in Shari Chesed, one in Beitar, where all the staff members live, so that these are these optional Shabbatonim that we have. Again, it helps the girls have, who don't have places to go for Shabbos, and also just helps in terms of the whole bonding, the whole experience. And it's optional, so girls who do have family that they need to go to certainly don't come, there's no pressure, but by and large the whole school comes because it's an enjoyable experience that they have.
How do you work the Shabbaton, I mean not the Shabbatons, the Shabbos is like if they really don't have family, I know that...
So we'll get there in a couple minutes, okay. When I talk about the dorms, we'll get there. The Chesed program, Tuesday afternoons, is the Chesed program. There's a range of opportunities that the girls have. It's mandatory. In other words, everybody has to be doing something. But in terms of what they do, there's many different options that the girls have open to them. Some available is to go to visit people in the hospital, to package food for Yad Eliezer, or other Chesed organizations that distribute food. There's actually even a girl who went swimming with blind people. I think she only did it one time and she didn't end up going back, but that's available should somebody want to do that. There's an old age home nearby that one of the students visits. There's a lot of families just with children that need just a little bit of help, a little extra hand. Sometimes staff members who need that help, and the girls come. And again, it's also another bonding experience where they get to spend time with the families in a much more relaxed type of an environment, and at the same time getting to know and getting to appreciate different communities that people live in. It's also something that the Chesed program is something that they find to really be an enriching experience. Okay, that's in terms of the school and the structure and the programming. I'll move on now just in terms of some of the policies and rules that we have. There's a midnight curfew in Tome Dvora. It started at 11:15. In other words, the past 2 years, we started at 11:15 both years, but both times we really saw that we felt that we really trusted the girls enough and that we were comfortable enough with them that we extended it to 12 o'clock. And I think going forward from now on, we're going to keep it at midnight. It's also that's an important facet of the school. Like I was mentioning before, there's a tremendous amount of reciprocal trust that we look to build in the school. There's no places that are off limits to go. In other words, girls are allowed to go to town, they're allowed to go wherever they want. They're not allowed to go into a bar or a club or anything along those lines. They're not allowed to be in an apartment or a hotel room alone with boys, under any circumstances. But short of those two things, we have no restrictions on where the girls can and cannot be. That's something that we put the ball in their court and we put the trust in their hands, and they live up to that responsibility. They live up to it and treat it with respect. There's a girl who told me at the beginning of the year this year that some of her friends from a different school were going to be going somewhere that probably could be called a bar, let's say a place where alcohol is served. Maybe it serves other stuff also. And she said to me that she was just talking to me about different school and different things. And she said, there's no way I'm going to blow it. There's no way I'm going to, give up on what I have over here and the trust that you have with me. And she said, even though, I probably could have gotten away with it, there's no way that anyone would ever probably know, but she said, I wouldn't let myself cross that line. I wouldn't let myself do something to breach that trust that you've put in me. That being said, though, it's a zero tolerance. Both of those policies in terms of the bars and in terms of the rooms with boys, those things are really no questions asked. If a girl does cross that line, so we can't set up a whole new school for one girl. The whole fundamental basis of the school is built on trust and respect and that reciprocation. And if a girl can't abide by that, so then Tome Dvora is just not the right place for her. It doesn't mean she's a bad girl, doesn't mean she doesn't deserve a year in seminary, but we can't accommodate somebody who is not able to play by the rules that we set up in this way. Unfortunately, it's something that that has happened, but it's something that we can't give in on, because it really undermines the whole structure of what we created the school to be, and it's not fair to the other 30 plus girls in the school that if a trust was undermined. We don't need to dwell on that.
What about friends who are boys?
So friends who are boys, that's an excellent question. It's not that's not something that we encourage. That's not a school rule at all. In other words, there are girls who
Girls who are my daughter went to Moshavas and she's 8. She's got friends who are
who
are also boys. But, you know, so, like, she's not interested in going to the places that you discuss.
Right.
But, like, what if a group went to town and they all had dinner? Is that allowed? Or
yeah, it's totally, you know, 100%. Right. I'm saying there's no rule about that. It'll be something that we'll discuss over the course of the year, platonic relationships and this. You know, those are things that we discuss in classes very openly and frankly. There's no rules regarding that at all. There's no rule against boys or boyfriends or interactions with boys on any level, except being alone somewhere with a boy.
Well,
which
I'm
is
not a candlelit
dinner.
Well, then they'll maybe get a talking, you know, in the office if that's such a wise thing to do. But they wouldn't get, you know, they wouldn't get the trouble, you know, at least as far as the school's concerned. I don't know. But in other words, we're looking, you'll see also when we get to the dress code, when we're talking about these things, we understand where the girls are coming from, and we're not creating a school that is going to have rules and structure that's going to force one of two things, either for girls to come and they know that they're going to be breaking the rules, that's not what we want, or for girls who are not going to come at all because they're going to say, oh, that school is not for me. So something like a bar, something like being alone in a room with a boy, yeah. There's no reason that any girl needs to come to Israel to do that, you know what I mean? But these other things, it's not, we don't want to create the rules in such a way, again, that either girls are going to come and break the rules, that's pointless, or that girls are going to say, oh, I don't want to go to that school, because there are many girls that really do belong in Talmud Devora who do have friends who are boys or even boyfriends, you know, and they're still great girls who want to grow and are looking for inspiration. You know what I mean? So we're not going to rule that girl out of the school. You know what I mean? But a girl who says, no, I need to go to a bar, so then we'll say, okay, then it's just not the right place for you. You know, we put it in a totally different category. You know, that's the... okay. In terms of just like the physical amenities or physical layout of the school, so the school is located in remote Efes Sheish, is what it's called. It's actually, if you look at a map of Yerushalayim, I mentioned before Google Earth, you can really see, if you can find it, I can, you know, show you maybe afterwards on a computer, but it's actually the northernmost street in Yerushalayim where we are. Rehov Atzag, 54 is the address. It's the north street of Yerushalayim. In other words, there's this row of villas, which is where Talmud Devora is, there's a sidewalk, there's a street, and then there's nothing. In other words, across the street is literally a valley. It's you know, in my opinion, it's the most stunning area of Yerushalayim. Like, it's just every morning the girls wake up and they look out their window or when they walk outside, and it's just this vast open valley in front of them with Kever Shmuel and Avi perched on the hill across the way. It's a beautiful area. Across the street is a tayelet, like a walkway that runs the length of the valley. You know, there are girls who jog in the morning over there, girls who just like walk around in the evening. It's a stunningly beautiful place. The truth of the matter is there are pictures, you could see like the first page of that article that shows the view a little bit. You see Kever Shmuel and Avi there in the background, and in the brochure, it just really doesn't do it justice. It's this beautiful open area. It's just, you know, kedai to come and see it just for that alone. We picked this location specifically because it's a quiet place, because it's like a quiet street, it's like, you know, there's not buses and cars and everything running by, and we wanted to have a place where the girls have space, where they have mental space, where they have physical space, where they could think, they could sit outside and enjoy the breeze, and, you know, it's really a beautiful area of Yerushalayim. At the same time, it's part of Yerushalayim proper, which means that the regular local Yerushalayim buses are within a 5-6 minute walk of the school. There's, you know, the 36, the 40, 16, there's a whole lot of buses that go straight from the area, and at the beginning of the year we give the girls all the information about where to catch the buses and what the routes are and where they go. It's, I think, about like a 40-minute bus to the center of town, maybe a little bit longer to get to the Kotel. By cab, any of these places are 15, 20 minutes away. We actually had a girl last year who walked to the Kotel. It took her about 2.5 hours, 2.25 hours. It was just like, you know, she went, you know, to do it as a project. But it's a beautiful area. Also, in the area right in the community where we are, there's, you know, a pizza store and a falafel store and a makolet and a meat store and a fruit store and a dry cleaners, all within 7-minute walk. There's like, you know, one of those little Israeli like, yeah, you know, mini strip malls, I guess you would call it, you know, one of those little Merkaz Meschari, and, you know, all of those things are available, you know, right over there. So the truth of the matter is, over the course of a week, there's no reason that a girl needs to leave the remote area. If they want to go, vakasha, but even, like, for little shopping that they need to go and do, it's all available right there for them. Not a car ride, I'm saying a six-minute walk. You know, very often when I am driving to or from school, I see the girls walking along the street there carrying their shopping bags. You know, the community already knows the school, they know the girls, the woman in the makolet, every time I go in there, she tells me about how good the girls are and, you know, all these things. So it's a beautiful community. In terms of the campus, I'll just describe it briefly. The whole building is self-contained. It's all under one roof, the entire Talmud Dvora, again, with the exception of the second year dormitory, it's all housed in one building. There's two floors of dorms. The top two floors are the dormitories. The dormitories have showers and a kitchen area, refrigerators, you know, all the basics that they need.
How many girls in a room? Or in a section? How's it divided
up? It's in rooms, between two and four girls in a room.
Okay.
The way it works
and
this year.
The bathrooms, how many share a bathroom?
I would have to make a cheshbon.
Okay.
Of the 31 girls between the two floors, I can't make the exact cheshbon. Maybe if you like email Daniela, I'm sure she can tell you quickly.
Okay.
But
how many bathrooms are on each floor?
It's not an equal number of girls on the two floors. That's what I'm trying to work out. Afterwards, you know what? Maybe I'll write it down. I'll see if I can work it out. But it's not something that we ever heard complaints about, and you'll hear why, because there's plenty of other showers and bathrooms one floor down also. You know, if need be. There's two floors of dormitories. From what we've heard from the girls, they're very comfortable. The mattresses are American mattresses, and there's, like we mentioned before, that it can get very hot there. In the summer, there's air conditioning, central air conditioning in the dorms, and same thing, the central air also works for heat in the winter. That's the two floors of the dorms. Below that is like the main school floor where Rabbi Fix and my office is located. The main central lounge is there, the two classrooms, the main office is all in that area. And then in addition, we have a separate section where men are not allowed, where there's an exercise room, there's a piano studio, like a small room with a piano with like wood floors. There's very good acoustics in there, and the girls play piano and sing in there. We had last year a girl who was really a professional musician who put out her own CD at some point, and she spent, you know, all of her free time in there composing music, and everything was really a very beautiful addition to the school. And this year also there's girls who are very skilled. And then, so adjacent to that exercise room, adjacent to the exercise room is another set of showers and bathrooms. So I'm saying if there's ever a need, then Erev Shabbos, if the showers upstairs are full, there's another three or four showers downstairs that are available for the spillover. Mm-hmm. I've never heard a complaint. I mean, maybe there are, but it never reached us. I've never heard a complaint of not enough bathrooms or showers. Hot water runs out, like it does in Israel sometimes, but in terms of the showers and bathrooms, I've never heard it. So that's that floor. Then the floor beneath that, there's a dining room and a base medrash, and then there's a room with vending machines with cold drinks and snacks and laundry machines, and there's like the school kitchen is in there. It's really a totally self-contained building. There's a little garden in the back of the building with, you know, some grass and trees and places to sit. It's really a beautiful campus. And the fact that it's all self-contained, it's all under one roof, really, like, you know, the girls really have no need to be elsewhere. Everything is there from the exercise. There's computers there. There's four computers with filtered internet access and email. The girls, you know, upload pictures and send them home and everything. It's all really available to them right there. In terms of the dorms being open, just with respect to the question you were asking before, the dorms never close. Literally, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, girls stay in the dorms. There's always supervision if a girl wants to stay in for Shabbos. There are girls who even made their own Shabbatonim in school. We had girls last year from Chicago who invited seven or eight friends from other seminaries, and they all came together to Talmud Dvora and spent Shabbos in the school, and they cooked their own food, and they had zmiros and everything. So the dorms never closed. We feel that that's an important thing, also educationally. You know, the girls should feel like that this is her home for the year. Why, you know, just like she never gets asked to leave her home. So I think it's probably like that in most seminaries, that, you know, it's open all year. I think it's important for the girls to feel that sense of stability. And
unfortunately, it's not open. It's not the case in a lot of seminaries, and that's a problem, because if you don't, they make them leave on Yom Tov. I mean, like, leave. Like, the school is closed. Oh. They can't invite anyone over. It's
okay.
Not so good.
Okay, so that's no. So Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. In fact, this year, I don't know what we're going to do this coming year. This year, because Rosh Hashanah was, I mean, if you look at the calendar, it's literally 1 week into the school year. So we sent out a letter at the beginning of the summer that said, if you don't have family to go to for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, let us know now, and we'll get you a seat in shul, and we'll get you meals. And a lot of girls stayed in for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and they had a meal before Yom Kippur, and a breakfast, and everything. The dorms are open all year round.
And so is there a community, like, right around?
Yeah, it's in a community, yeah. Sure. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, they have...
This remote Efeshesh is where we are, and then across the street this way is remote Gimel, and across the street that way is remote Dalit, and we have staff members that live in the neighborhood. You know, so, yeah, that's for sure.
When you say the dorms don't close, does that mean there's food, or that, I mean, that means they have a bed to sleep in?
Okay, so we'll get to the meals in a second, in terms of the meal plan. So, no, during Yom Tovim, there aren't officially meals as part of the school.
So then a girl who's staying in the dorm, like, for example, if my daughter doesn't come home for Pesach,
yes, exactly.
Right.
You would so arrange in terms of, for her to eat by people who live in the neighborhood? Or
so we'll definitely do it. You know, in terms of during the weekday, you know, during the week, not talking about Yom Tov, so then in that time, in terms of food, she would have to fend for herself. You know, she would have to get her own meals. And so the meals that we provide, which I'll get to in a second, so the meals are provided when the school is officially on. When school is not in session, or let's say there's a tiol and one girl doesn't go on the tiol for some reason, so there's not meals for her that day. You know, the meal plan is only when there's actual school days.
But that is a problem. Like, if, you know, if our kids aren't going to come home for the whole week of Pesach, are they going to be by themselves? Or,
so
mean,
I'll say last year...
goes home and they're by themselves in the dorm?
No, well, no. So staying in the dorms, the madrichot are staying in the dorms. The imbayit lives in the building. There's a woman with her family who lives in the building. In terms of being alone, well, next year she might not be in the building, she might be adjacent, like next door. But in terms of being alone in the dorm, so at that stage in the year, the girl's comfortable enough to be staying there, especially if there's madrichot or an imbayit around. In terms of the meals, so for Yom Tov, the girls who stayed last year, a bunch of them came to my house. I'm just saying, like, for example, for both Sedarim, we made a second Seder last year, and I think we'd probably do it again this year. Setting up Yom Tov meals at that stage of the year, they know enough people in terms of staff and in terms of this that I don't think anybody really had a problem. You have to do it in advance. You know, you have to start working on it like Purim time, basically, to start setting up your meals for Pesach. But at that stage in the year, most of the girls know more than enough people to be able to find meals for Pesach.
I'm sure if they don't, they can come to you or the madrichot, right?
Yeah, to give a hand.
You know,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Day,
of course, exactly. Right, of course. I can't, you know, promise that we'll be able to set them up. You know, it's not something that the school would take an achrayus and say, okay, yeah, we guarantee you meals, but we'll do our best, of course. You know, that's the phase in the year. We're helping everybody at any way that we can. But
and call them away. What do the girls
right, so I'm saying in terms of meals at that time, so there's no official school.
Do they just clean their kitchen and kosher?
Yeah, that's what the girls did. Yeah, they did that.
Buy some matzah.
Yeah, that's more or less what they did. Or it just depends on how the calendar works out. This year, I think Yom Tov is Sunday, Monday in terms of Pesach. So it's really just Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that they're dealing with. So yeah, they arranged in terms of getting together meals and food and things like that. But you know, in terms of the dorm and the facilities, so we worked it out with them in advance, just in terms of Pesach. It was complicated, but we basically went over with them, what areas do you want to have available for you, to you for Pesach? You know, the exercise room, should we sell, or are you going to use it? The base bedroom, should we sell? Or, you know, basically we worked it out with them.
Oh,
and we worked out in terms of the cleaning. And
what kind of kitchen facilities they have in the dorm room? You said they have a refrigerator.
They have a refrigerator, they have microwaves, they have electric burners, like just an electric stovetop. The basics. Yeah, yeah,
they
for sure.
They could make some soup.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. There's actually a girl last year who sold soup out of the dorms. There was a girl from Columbus, Ohio, who used to cook soup, and she used to sell soup in little cups to the other girls.
Yeah, sure, you can. We just don't.
Okay. Yeah. So, No, the girls, they worked it out last year. It was a bunch of girls who stayed back last year. And for Yom Tov, they didn't stay in the dorms because they wanted to be, you know, where they can get Siddharm and things like that. But I think it worked out for everybody last year.
And how long is that break? In other words,
you know, just for the entire month of Nisan?
It's
exactly.
More or less. It's more or less close. I mean, it's basically like we follow the seminary schedule of what all the other schools do. So it's more or less for the full month of Nisan.
Do the weeks before?
So there's a Poland trip, which has nothing to do with the school, nothing to do with the legacy trip, which I happen to go on, but that's not a Torah Devorah thing. Unfortunately, I wish we could afford to do it, to take all the girls. But there's a Poland trip that a lot of the girls opt to do, which I go on as an educator for the trip. So I'll tell you, I forgot. The truth is, last year there were a bunch of girls that did not go on Legacy, that stayed for Pesach, and we did programming for them. I just remembered right now. We did programming for them that week. We did little things, like little day trips. It wasn't like every single day something, but there was a group of four or five girls, and we did have programming for them. I just remember right now. So, and those days that we did programming, we provided lunch for them. I forgot about this because I was in Poland. I wasn't running it, but now that you're, like, it's coming back to me, there was a group of girls that stayed back. So, It depends probably on each year how many girls stay and what their interests are and what we could do for them, but I just remembered right now that we did do that.
I have a question about this Poland trip. The school is $16,000 a year. I don't recall offhand what the other schools are. I know some of them include the trip.
Right.
Why is it, if your school's is more expensive, why is it not included in the other schools it is?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to, when you're saying a school's, first, I don't know what the other schools are charging, but you have to look at the whole list of what is provided. You know, I know in terms of what we provide for that money, in terms of the staff, in terms of the two meals a day, in terms of a cell phone that we cover, in terms of health insurance that we cover for the year. So, I don't know.
That.
Right, well, I didn't get to it yet. Oh. Yeah, so, I mean, well... So I'm saying, I don't know, you have to compare apples and apples,
do you have
other schools have people that underwrite the program also.
That could be.
Rachel was at Afike Torah, there was someone who underwrote the whole trip.
Okay, so that could be. So if you find us one of those, we'll be happy to.
Do you have any idea, like, what that costs? Because
$5,000
the Poland trip?
Something like
$5,000. No, it was like $1,800. The legacy trip, which again has nothing to do with Torah Devorah, I'm an employee of them as a separate thing. Not even an employee. I go along for the week. I get it. I go along and I speak. It's $1,800 this year in that vicinity.
Better.
Not $5,000. It's $1,800.
So I'm just saying. This is my first child. I have no idea, like, how much money they even need for the month. Providing that they need to buy a little food, or if it's a holiday and they need to.
Right. So in the enrollment package, like, once the students are enrolled in the school, so we send a package before the end of the summer. Including a packing list, so we send all this information about what I don't remember the numbers offhand, mm-hmm. and I don't have it with me in terms of what the approximate spending money should be and all that stuff. That's all they'll have that.
Okay.
Okay. Just in terms of the meals, now that we're up to that, so we provide two hot catered meals a day. There's a dairy lunch and a fleishig dinner every day. In addition, with fresh vegetables and everything, salad. In addition, there's available all day round the clock, which the girls eat for breakfast. So I guess you could say we provide three meals a day. But there's bread, peanut butter, jelly, chocolate spread. It's Israel after all. And fruit, apples and oranges and that type of stuff that's available 24 hours a day. In addition, there's a tureen of soup, like a plug-in cauldron of soup that stays until it gets finished, and then the caterer refills it. So that type of food is available 24 hours a day, all the time. In the middle of the night, the girl's hungry. I eat that for breakfast almost every day. I come in and I, set up my office, go downstairs, make a peanut butter sandwich, and the two hot meals a day. The girls have to sign up for it at no cost. In other words, included in the tuition, but we have a sign-up sheet so that if a girl knows she's going to be away for a week, that we're not wasting that food.
Mm-hmm.
So all they have to do is sign up the week before. They put a check on a piece of paper. It's usually all the girls check off for all the meals, but we just want to make sure that it's done in an organized fashion, but that's also included in the tuition of two meals a day. Finally, just in terms of you asking just what's included in the tuition, the cell phone and the phone plan for the year is covered by tuition. Just the phone calls the students have to pay for. We feel it's very important in terms of security that we know that every single girl has a phone and that they're on our phone plan and that it's all taken care of. And that way, we can send an SMS message with one click of the mouse. We can send the message to all the girls at once. And this year, Baruch Hashem, it hasn't happened. But I don't know if you remember last year, there was an Erev Shabbos. There were riots in the Old City. I don't know if you remember when this happened. It was on the news and stuff. So I found out about it in the morning, and we texted all the girls. And there were actually girls that were on a bus on their way to the Kotel, and they got off the bus and came home. So that's mandatory. In other words, sometimes people say they want to get their own phones. That's fine. If you want to get a second phone, mm-hmm. that's fine. But the phone is provided, included in the tuition, at no cost to the parents at all. You just have to cover the phone calls and text messages, whatever, that the girls make. But included in the plan is hundreds of minutes for free within the group and things like that. You know, it's a very good plan. In addition, health insurance is also something that we want to make sure that every girl has. And health insurance is also covered as is included in the tuition. This through AIM, the American Israel Medical Plan. That's what, you know, most of the many seminaries and yeshivos use. We provide the basic plan. The parents, if they want to opt to upgrade, it's like $80 or something to upgrade to the gold plan. But that's also included in the tuition. We don't charge for the internet access or for email or for anything. There's no like nickel and diming in the school at all. In other words, you know exactly what is covered in the tuition. The only thing that you're ending up having, that you don't have to pay for tutors in the basic medrash. Even if a girl needs like serious remedial work and she needs a one-on-one tutor, so that's included in the tuition. The only services, let's say, in the school that the students have to pay for additionally is the laundry machine. You know, this is like a washing machine and dryer, coin operated, and books. But otherwise, you know, every other cost, the tiolim, everything else is completely covered by the school.
Is there a dry cleaners nearby?
There's a dry cleaners right nearby. Yeah. I don't know if the girls use it or not. It's a good question. I can't recommend it, but I just don't know. But
the girls do their own laundry then?
They do laundry in the school.
They're responsible for their own
laundry. Yeah. And I think that basically covers it. It's you know, Baruch Hashem, the girls, you know, both in terms of the alumni effect, also just Mr. Lee said I should mention, you know, that the fact that we had last year 35 girls and 12 girls came back for a second year, and there were another two that were really supposed to come back, and they couldn't in the end for college reasons, literally at the last minute. But, you know, thank God, it really speaks volumes, you know, the fact that many girls and their parents, you know, were as happy with and interested in Torah Devorah. I was telling them over dinner, we were not planning on opening up a Shana Bet program, a second-year program. It was, like, a little bit too ambitious for first-year school, who's just, like, you know, finally getting settled with the first year and working on opening their next, you know, second first year. But there was just such a rut zone. There was such a desire among the girls. And we got emails from the girls and from the parents. So that, you know, so we did it, and you know, Baruch Hashem, they add a tremendous amount to the school, and yeah, Baruch Hashem, it's a very.
Can girls have friends from other seminaries sleep over?
Yeah, they just have to work it out with the Imbayit. Mm-hmm. In terms of the sleeping out policy, we're also just discussing this over dinner. The policy is like this: for every night that the girl is in Israel for the year, she must be in the dorms. That's like the set, with the exception of Friday nights in terms of Shabbos. But basically, we see it that we are acting in vis-a-vis the safety and security of your daughter. We are acting as surrogate parents, and just like, you know, your daughter needs to stay at home unless you know exactly where she's going. So that's exactly the policy that we have. And you know, the students must be in the dorms. There's never a night, even vacation, even Sukkot, Pesach, Cholamoid, even any time that a girl is in Israel, she's in the dorms, unless we get a fax from a parent that says, I give my daughter permission to sleep in such and such a place. That way we know that you know exactly where your daughter is. There's no hefkeros, there's never a time that you and I both don't know where your daughter is. And we think it makes no sense that way, that just, you know, they're away in a foreign country for the year and you have a week and a half of Sukkot, and, you know, why should it be a free-for-all? You wouldn't let it be a free-for-all in your own home. So that's our policy. So if they want to sleep out at another school, so they can do that. We just need to know that you're aware of that. And if they want to have girls sleep over by us, so then that's, yeah, that's fine. They just
but they got on Yontif, like for instance, the circus or Yontif. Like
no, Shabbos and Yontif, they sign out. Yeah, Shabbos and Yontif, they have to just sign out and tell us where they are. But any school night, like any night of the week, or weeknight, Thursday nights when there's no school on Friday, or Chol Hamoed when there's no school, so they have to receive. We have to receive a fax from the parents that we know that you know where they are. That's, okay. Thank you.
When they have the off days, mm-hmm. is there a madricha on campus?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, the madrichot, there's four madrichot who live in the building. That's their home also. They live there year-round. Like I said, the Ein Bayit also this year lives in the building. Next year, I think it's going to be in the building. It might be in a building next door. But there's always on-site supervision. That's, year-round.
And you don't, the chumash is the main thing. There's a navish here. Is there a Mishnayos?
There's no Mishnayos learning, no. There are girls last year, I think, who wanted to learn Mishnayos. I think Rabbi Brown, the Menahel Ruchani, had learned with them. I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly if he did it or not, but it's not part of the curriculum. It's not a set part of the curriculum.
So as far as the application, we fill them out and send them to you? Do we give them to the school? What do we do?
Different schools have different policies. That's between the school. I mean, most parents send it. As long as we get it, it doesn't matter. To the Chicago office. And
are you on the joint application?
We're on the joint application as well. Yes.
Oh, she's filling out the joint
application. Yeah, that's fine.
And the application says someplace on, or at least the joint application said that you want, you need, of course, a medical form and recommendations.
Right.
And it requires SATs.
SAT scores, yeah.
SAT scores.
Okay. Yeah, just they fill in the score.
Oh, she just writes in the score.
Yeah, yeah, just write in the score.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't have to have. First of all, she didn't take the SAT. She took the ACT.
Okay.
Okay. So, but I don't have to. We don't have to.
Yeah.
Have the
no.
ACT
it just
send the scores. To
no,
you.
No, no, no. I think there's just
there's just
a line.
Okay.
I think that says, just SAT scores, math, verbal. That's.
The joint application says on the cover sheet, it says, please be sure that the following information arrives by the deadline.
Uh-huh,
right?
Interesting. Okay, I don't think we've ever received that.
Okay.
And but I didn't know that. But, like, are you using SAT scores for entrance purposes?
Less for entrance purposes than for, let's say, placement in the track purposes. We use all these bits of information between the interview and in the interview we have the girls read. Chumash and Rashi and translate. We ask questions about comprehension, just to see between the interview, between their transcripts, and between the SATs. We kind of get a gauge of where this girl is at academically. We've never not accepted a girl because of an SAT score. In fact, between you and me, I don't know if we've ever really looked at the SAT scores. It might just be, let's say, if we see that a girl is like borderline in terms of her transcript and she's got like an excellent SAT score, so we might say, okay, you know what, we'll start her in the higher track. She obviously has a certain aptitude, but it's not, at least in terms of Torah, I can't speak for other schools, it's not an entrance requirement. There are many girls who didn't take SATs. The first year we had 13 girls from England. They don't have SATs. You know what I mean?
That was the other question. Like, where do you draw your girls from?
From all over the country and England. I wanted to actually hand this around, if you don't mind, just in terms of the family name of the high school and the email. I was just, in Bruria yesterday. SKA, I don't know if you know all the names of these schools.
Berea,
SKA, Eula, we've had one student this year and one student last year, but it's, exactly the type of school that we draw from in that range of schools. In England, I don't know if you're familiar with Hasmonean or Yavne in Manchester, all the standard American high schools from around. Fix was in Hefter and Henk. There's out of town schools all over the place. Columbus Torah Academy, mm-hmm. All these.
The application deadline is December 1st.
I thought it was
the 30th.
Yeah, I think.
What's the joint app? I remember the joint application. I remember hearing
that's
that.
On
yeah, November 30th.
There's a
November 30th.
I mean, Julie's been doing it herself.
If there's some schools, if you want, there's a list, and it was this workshop actually. I think she actually, in a packet, gives you a joint application.
Yeah, and then it goes.
I remember